charge here? And why am I here?
Our chair is missing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think we were charged with looking at this joint primacy issue.
Okay.
I think we need some background on what the problem is that we're supposed to be addressing. Okay. And it sounds like things happen differently in different departments. So, yeah, some insight on what exactly we're trying to deal with would be helpful.
Okay.
This is with respect to unit criteria or?
With respect to, yeah, how people are reviewed.
Okay. Good. All right. I can start. So the College of Natural Science and Mathematics, and again, I'm Paul Lair, Dean of the College. We have about 110 faculty or so in the college, of which two-thirds have a joint appointment with an external research institute.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big deal for us, and it's kind of almost the majority of faculty. Mm-hmm. We have the Geophysical Institute and IAB are the big two. We have five faculty who are joint with the museum and two who are joint with IARC. And so in all those cases, that joint appointment was set up at the time of hire with some understanding of what that proportion would be. We have faculty who are a quarter in the research institute and three quarters of their 9 months is in the college. And we have some faculty are 50-50 and some that are 25-75 the other way. So 25% of their appointment is in the college, and yet tenure resides within the college, mm-hmm. and not within the research institute. And the institutes like this arrangement because that lure of tenure is a very strong marketing tool. Rather than just coming in as a research faculty member in an institute, having that promise of tenure, that promise that there is some whatever security tenure represents these days, is important to the institutes in recruiting. So even though their involvement in teaching is relatively minor, maybe a course a year, there is still the expectation of mentorship, and there is a much more large research component. Now, where it gets into the problem is what is the expectation of that institute for that faculty member to bring in their salary? And does a tenure track appointment guarantee the university promises 9 months of salary in perpetuity? And so that's where writing that initial offer letter in terms of what is committed by the college, right, what is committed by the institute is important. The GI right now has a sort of soft ledger expectation that faculty will bring in part of their 9 month salary in addition to summer salary. IAB does not. IAB usually offers about 4.5 months of tenure of salary from Fund One, and then the summer salary is from grants and contracts. So the different institutes handle supporting faculty in different ways.
If you're 75% CNSM and 25% IAB, for example,
yeah.
Is it the same?
IAB will put up that money, or GI will put up some of that Fund One guarantee.
75% of 9 months.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so for example, if you're three quarters college, I pay 75% of their salary, 6.75 months, and the institute pays 2.25 months of their 9 month salary.
Okay.
Now, whether that's from grants or from Fund One, that's up to the institute and the faculty member
okay.
to essentially negotiate.
Right.
So that's part of it. But then the question is in tenure and promotion. Now, because this unit criteria, the CNSM unit criteria, are written by faculty, most of whom have joint appointments, the implicit nature of this is supposed to be that the institute faculty have a voice in writing this. And in fact, CNSM criteria are up this year, and I have appointed a committee of representatives from departments. So you guys should be seeing revised criteria probably sometime after the new year. All of the members of that committee have joint appointments with institutes. So I assume that as this is being written, the desires of those institutes for faculty with joint appointments are being reflected in this document. So, and I don't think faculty should have two sets of criteria. I think there should be one set of criteria. And right now, that criteria is the one that's approved for CNSM, because that's where tenure resides. Now, I know GI is writing new unit criteria for research faculty within the GI, and they're basing it off of what we have for CNSM's criteria as the starting point. And we have representatives. Rich Collins is on both committees, and he is acting to make sure that that research faculty are kind of evaluated in the same way that tenure track faculty are. So we're trying to get rid of that ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Now, IAB only has a couple pure research faculty, so it's not a big issue, mm-hmm. As much as it is in the GI. So that's kind of a summary, just to start off, in terms of the way things work in my college. Now, when faculty are evaluated for tenure and promotion, the dean and the director both have these criteria, and they evaluate the faculty on these criteria. So the director of the GI, IAB, the museum, know what those expectations are. They are in agreement, although they don't sign off on this document. Of course, I don't sign off on this document either.
Right.
It's a faculty document that is generated. So, and I abide by this. So I'll just stop there and let Doug kind of introduce his situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's similar, although we don't have nearly the extent of joint appointees that Paul does.
Right.
We have a handful. And they tend to be more varied partly right. because of that. So we have joint appointments with GI. We have we have one joint appointment kind of with Paul and GI. And we have joint appointments with INE to a certain extent. At least that's the way I would characterize them. One is a joint appointment with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. So anyway, there are a number of joint appointments that we have out there. And we've had, perhaps because of the large variety in appointments, we've had more trouble with them over the years. For instance, back in the early days of the Arctic Regis Supercomputing Center, maybe Chris can speak to this, we had joint appointments with ARSC.
And we did too.
And they just said one day, sorry, we're not paying for the other half of that faculty position right. any longer. Too bad, so sad.
Right.
So this doesn't necessarily directly relate to unit criteria, but it really relates to how these faculty are supported. And the one kind of essential problem with all of this is that deans and research directors typically have somewhat different expectations because of their different financial models. And, you know, an important thing for GI is that, and for the Institute of Northern Engineering, is that research faculty bring in some or all of their own salary. If you look at the unit criteria in engineering, none of them say bring in part or all of your own salary. In fact, they kind of downplay the impact of grants and contracts over the impact of publication.
Right.
Publication in and of itself doesn't necessarily help you cover your salary. And so when you have a joint appointment, there's a little bit of a disconnect. If it's a 50-50 joint appointment, the director is over here thinking, well, I need this person to be self-sufficient. And the dean is over there with the faculty in the academic department saying, well, we need publication, we need grad student mentorship, and we need these other things. But and it's great if they have funding too, mm-hmm. But it's no skin off our nose if they don't. Well, so it results in a problem on the financial side I applaud. I think this is one way to solve the problem, is to have unit criteria that satisfy the director.
Yeah.
My guess is that some of these unit criteria have, I mean, certainly when Frank Williams was directing the Arctic Regis Supercomputing, the CEM unit criteria would not have satisfied him. In fact, didn't, and he just pulled the funding.
So you need something like specifying some acceptable level of grant support or something?
Yeah.
Like or a joint appointment. I mean, that would have to be separate.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's where they're going to go with your unit criteria review this year.
Within CSM, the two weaknesses that I can see in the current criteria that I asked them to look at is really to emphasize these variable appointments between the research and teaching site. It's in there, it says workload will be considered, but I think it's very important for our document to have appointments have these kind of structures, and under those are very different kinds of expectations.
Right.
The other thing is that under research performance, one of my complaints to the committee was, for promotion to associate professor, we have some examples of how you establish and sustain an appropriate research program. One of them is publications, and it's not just publications, but it's qualified publications in referee journals, high impact factors, and blah, blah, blah. Data sets that have contributions to various criteria. Presentations, but not just presentations to your mom, presentations at professional conferences that have some level of standard. Research proposals, but again, not research proposals to your mom, but research proposals to external agencies. And then it just says acquisition of external funding, full stop. It doesn't say quality, quantity, expectation. So I could come in and say, well, I got a grant from my mom. I've got external funding. It's not from UAF. I've met that criteria. Check that box, even though I'm 75% research. So I brought this to the attention of the faculty. They said, well, this is a loophole that the directors are concerned about, that the committee is concerned about. You guys really need to think about qualifying. All the other ones have qualifications of a standard for tenure, but that one, it just simply says bring in some money. And it doesn't have any, and it doesn't even reflect whether you're 100% in the college where I don't have a big expectation of funding, or 75% in an institute where it's vital for the success of that institute.
Right.
So I've asked the committee to kind of address those two questions when they're looking at revising the criteria. I think these criteria are in pretty good shape. They've been very useful for the directors and for the deans. So as you guys look at them later on, you know, I think they're mostly okay. But those are a couple areas that in the last couple of years we've seen that loophole. You know, I brought in some money and they're not really supporting their research effort in the same sense.
I think that's the critical issue. And I know we'd have this trouble in I&E because I&E has a financial model that it operates on. And if we ended up with a joint appointee, 50% in I&E, 50% in electrical engineering or something, that ended up tenured. So now the I&E soft funding appointment is somehow codified forever. But that person may or may not be, they may meet the departmental or the academic unit criteria, which don't necessarily focus on funding at all. But all of a sudden, the position with I&E becomes shaky, you know, and the finances matter. So I've taken a little bit of a different approach in all of this. And frankly, the way I'm doing it now, I don't so much, maybe it's not the best approach. I mean, I kind of like the way Paul is approaching it. But what I've been doing for the last several times when we've had a joint appointment, I've appointed them as 50% tenure track.
I like that a lot. That's just what I was going to ask. How does the financial commitment work if you're 25% college and 75% research and you get tenure and you decide you're going to quit getting funding?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Frank Williams dealt with it in ours by just simply cutting ties with everybody. So we don't have the money to support. You're not bringing enough money.
Yeah.
You guys are all out.
Yeah, but then, of course, that came back to hit our colleges.
And it did. And they found money. And so we absorbed several computer science people at CNSM. You absorbed some engineers.
Right.
And we kind of move forward. Right now, I am so vested with the institutes that it's sort of like we have this death pact at this point. If the institute ever came to me and said, Doug's not pulling his weight, we don't want him anymore, I've told the institute directors, I'll never enter into another joint appointment again because I can't, if I have to pick up his money, three quarters of his salary, I can't afford that. Yeah. And then that just basically kills it. But we've got 65 faculty who have this kind of condition. And and the institutes have thrived, the GI and IAB especially, because of their ability to sort of promise these sorts of things. So, so I've got this sort of death pact. It's if any of us renege.
We need to talk to their directors. because it sounds like that's sort of tenured research position. And if they want to be in that business.
Yeah. And that's what they've understood.
I mean, that's what they're saying, is we will continue to support this
person. You know, I think if I were in your situation, I wouldn't have been so nervous about this, because GI and IAB are pretty well established, codified, large units. You know, the ones I'm worried about are ARSC, CNT, ASEP. A lot of those are flashes in the pan, and some of them just go away. CNT, for instance, we also had to absorb two faculty positions from CNT, the Center for Nanosensor Technology.
Right.
And AUTC is another one. Even though that was a federally funded center, that went away too and caused problems.
Yeah, GI and IAB get substantial general fund support. The one that I'm most concerned about right now is IARC, because I have a couple faculty who are in IARC, and IARC has very little fund support, International Research Center. That's one where I'm wondering about whether that institute is going to be long-term viable, so like ASEP or
these other ones. That actually brings up something else I wanted to say, is IARC has unit criteria.
Yes, and they do.
As a separate, so now...
So for the research...
I mean, just for in IARC, for, I mean, even the ones that are teaching, half research, the same way ours address what you do in the research institute, theirs address what you do in the college.
Yeah. And so for the two faculty I have in IARC, we need to kind of address that aspect of it. I only have two right now.
Who are those? I'm in IR. Can I?
Oh, it's Igor and Zhendong.
Okay.
And they're both in atmospheric sciences.
Yeah, I think that's, well, I think having, I think, in my opinion, the unit criteria that anyone's promoted or tenured by are the unit criteria that are associated with the department that's granting tenure.
Yeah.
Period paragraph. If they're purely research faculty, then, I mean, INE's working on developing its own unit criteria too, but I see those as unit criteria for the research faculty. If they have a tenure track appointment in a department, then my view of it is that you use the departmental unit criteria. And the problem with our departmental unit criteria is that they don't focus on the funding side of the question. So thus, my reaction to this was just to offer 50% tenure track appointments. Yeah. And so we're on the hook for 4.5 months of salary. And if, you know, if whatever, if ASEP fails, or in the old days, if CNT failed, I'd say, all right, well, sorry, CNT failed. You need to look around and find the other half of your salary somewhere.
Right.
But we don't have a money tree in college engineering minds. Money trees are disappearing rapidly around campus. And so anyway, I've taken a different approach and just made 50% tenure track appointments. But those, frankly, aren't as attractive as people ask, what is that? And I say, well, the commitment that the university makes once you're tenured is 4.5 months, and you're still reliant on your research and the research institute to help cover the other 4.5 months of your 9-month salary and your summer salary for that matter.
And a half-time appointment is permissible under the CBA.
Mm-hmm.
That's the minimum requirement. The other thing that I do also is we trade between the institutes, we trade quarter-time appointments. So they have a faculty member who is not being as productive in their career. They may want to teach some more. They may want to reduce their debt.
Yeah.
We have another faculty up and coming who's really got three grants funded, and they need more research time. We've actually formally traded quarter times and moved somebody from half time to three quarters research, or somebody to three quarters teaching, and allow that kind of flexibility with the faculty member's agreement, with their permission. And so we've actually allowed changes in that weighting as the appointment changes, as the faculty member evolves in their career. Sometimes they want to do more teaching to reduce their research debt. Sometimes they've got big grants and they want to devote time to that. And rather than doing a buyout, we've basically just swapped. We use this kind of like currency between the institutes and the colleges.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a wash in terms of the cost.
We don't have nearly the flexibility that the units as large as GI and IAB do, but we've done a little bit of that in engineering as well, with a little bit of joint appointment money that IAB has.
Yeah.
But so one question about the up and coming CNSM unit criteria is, will they, if we had a set of unit criteria that were variable depending on the fraction of research appointment. And not just research workload, because the problem with our unit criteria in engineering is that research accomplishment is measured mostly by publication. It doesn't have anything to do with financially supporting the position.
Mm-hmm.
So the consideration of workload level in research isn't enough unless really what you need is level of appointment at an institute. Even assuming that most of the institute have the same level of expectation for self-funding. And I don't know if that's true. It sounds like it's not true, because IAB and GI are significantly different on that point.
Well, they are. And the other one is that all of my faculty, for whatever portion I pay, it's a 60-30-10 workload. So actually, I pay every faculty in the college to do research, even if they have another appointment in the institute.
Right.
In a similar sort of way, the institutes do pay faculty to mentor graduate students. That's usually an expectation of faculty. So there is that, and that tends to fall under teaching, although it really is this fourth category, mentorship. And so there is a sort of swap there. I mean, they do that, but faculty, so their workload, their appointment might be 4.5 months or 50-50 between GI or between CNSM and IAB, but their workload is more like, 40 or maybe even 35, 65, 10 or something like that, or I can't add, 55, 10. Much more heavily based on research, because all my faculty have a research expectation. And so if they're 2.25 months, they're not teaching 7.5 workload units in the classroom. There are also other expectations.
Yeah.
So I think tying it to appointment is important, but also then as a unit peer committee, as this campus-wide committee considers it, they also have to look at workload.
Yeah, yeah.
Workload and appointment are both in play.
So, I mean, if we had unit criteria that said that these are the expectations for a 50% institute-appointed faculty, and that those expectations actually included successful grants and contracts.
Right.
That might go a long ways to solving some of these problems. And so that if you really had a 100% tenure-track appointment in electrical engineering, you taught at least a couple courses a semester, you had some research expectation, but no specific expectation to bring in funding, you'd be okay. Yeah. On the other hand, if you had a 50-50 joint appointment between electrical engineering and GI, the GI director is going to expect some success in grants and contracts to help support that softer position, if you will, up in GI. And if that were built into the unit criteria for promotion and tenure, that would be a helpful step. But I still see a problem if, let's say, a 50-50 joint appointed faculty member, I mean, you already alluded to this by the swapping thing, right? What happens if a 50-50 joint appointee is doing a good job, has plenty of grants and contracts to support the 50% of the research institute, get tenured, and then drop off the power band?
Yep.
And 5 years later, all of a sudden, the institute director is struggling to support that position.
Well, I mean, we do have post-tenure review. Now, we have not put much meat into enforcing post-tenure review to say you are no longer meeting the criteria as outlined here. But we haven't gone that far, other than in the extreme cases where we have encouraged retirement or, you know, things like that, where faculty have retired. So that's a big issue as well, is what happens at any level, in any unit, when the faculty member no longer, when they've retired in place, as it were.
So in practice, you still pay them even if they're not bringing in their three or four.
If they're tenured at 9 months, the university's obligated on the hook for 9 months of salary, period, paragraph. I mean, unless there's a dismissal, which is, as Paul said, I mean, could be an outcome from post-tenure review, but that's a fairly arduous process.
Yeah. And the two institutes, as Doug said, the two ones that I deal with are very different. IB, like I said, pays every faculty member, because they're mostly half-time, 4.5 months. And then anything they bring in goes towards summer. But they have in their budget general fund support for the salaries for the most part. Now, they would like to get more money and more ICR because that's how they fund all their grad students and things like that. The GI actually gives everybody basically a 12-month contract, but then says for whatever part of the GI we're paying for, whatever part of that contract, you need to bring in 59% of your salary, and we'll underprint 41%. And if you're really bad, we might cut you back to 9 months. But the GI is pretty liberal with that. And so that's, but then it's this, and they're big socialist organizations where everything goes into a big pot. All the ICR goes into a big pot.
Right.
All of the other kinds of support goes into this. And then it's doled out by the director to support maybe a non-productive faculty for a couple of years. So it's a really different, both of them are very different models. Now, in the sciences, reality, if I have somebody that's 100% of the college, I have an expectation that they do some research. Usually research involves needing money to do that research. I don't have a fund that says, well, I need a computer or I need a test tube or whatever it is. Here you go. They need to bring in their own money to support their own research. And if they can't do that, even if it's a small research, then for some faculty, I've actually modified their workload so they're almost 100% teaching. And so I've actually had the flexibility to do that solely because they're solely in the college.
Right.
And that's an easier thing to do.
Right.
But if I have to trade workload units with the institutes, it's more complicated.
Well, because then the problem is if you have a 50-50 joint appointed faculty member that for some reason either isn't or stopped pulling their own weight on the funding side,
right,
the director comes to you and says, well, look, we could continue at a quarter time, but we can't continue supporting this person for 4.5 months a year. I think you should pick up the rest of the bill.
Right.
Then you, Paul, have to come up with the money for that and the class assignments, right?
Sure. And I've done that. But then I've talked to the director and said, okay, well, that's one less quarter time that's available for a joint hire in the future. I'll borrow off of that. And so that's the kind of dealing I have to do is it's still a finite amount of money. I mean, I'm not creating money if I bring in somebody. The institute needs to also realize it's going to cost them down the road. And so, but I had a couple, in physics, we've done some hires where the norm was in the old days, quarter-time college, three-quarter institute. These were old research faculty that got moved into tenure lines at some point in the 70s and 80s. And with the retirements, the director has come to me and said, core time in the college is not enough because it's a big research expectation. Make them all half-time. I said, okay, we'll make them all half-time, the new hires we do. But that means you're getting half as many bodies in your institute to conduct your research. And you realize that. And that's where we've gone to. But they've been much more attractive when we've been able to hire a higher quality faculty member because of that underpinning of support that the college can offer.
Yeah.
And also it gets them more engaged in the teaching program, more engaged with the students. They're a very successful faculty being 50-50. So.
How does the evaluation process work then currently? So do the directors write separate evaluations?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And usually I make the directors write them first.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, so for tenure, we'll get the file from the committee. It'll go right up to the institute. The directors will write them, and then I'll get them back, and I'll write my evaluation. Right now, for all the faculty, for the untenured faculty, both of us will write an evaluation and meet with the untenured faculty together. And so that's one of the things we try to do in terms of expectation is that as a junior faculty member, they write their annual activities report. I meet with them, with the department chair, annually just to sort of have a test of where they're going. And the director is at the same meeting. So that the idea is if we're saying that the faculty member hears one message, and if the, I don't want to be saying, well, you need to teach more and you need to be more a student, and I don't want the director saying, no, you need to do more grants. We talk in advance and say, okay, well, what's the message we want to send for this faculty member at this point in his or her career? So there's one message, and that's a very important part of it, so that they're not seeing, well, the director says I need to be, you know, blow off all this student mentoring stuff and really just write proposals. So that's a very important part when we look at the criteria that they are a buy-in from all the entities. And so this is where IARC is going to have a conversation with the new director of IARC is to make sure that we're all on the same page. And so that's going to be a challenge. And then we do have some internal, you know, I mean, INE is a kind of an interesting duck because it's within the college, so you can say, well, I control everything, and I can move workloads around any way I want. But it's also got this very much leveraged soft money independent string to it. So so it's a little bit of a different, but INE is acting almost like an independent institute.
Yeah.
Really. But it happens to be administered by you.
So. Yeah. No, it is. And you know, it's continued to operate pretty well that way, I would say.
So problems that we can do. So I think what we need to do is revise the blue book to reflect the language that describes these appointments.
This helped a lot more than I expected it to, because it seemed like this huge tangle of worms. And one of the things I like a lot is the unit criteria reflecting that, which will take some time, but these are the two biggest. And well, do you remember when engineering, the CEO?
They're up next year.
Okay.
So I'll be
and
very
computer science would probably just modify along with, and what ours are based on yours plus a little bit more. So we'd probably just say, we're going again, even though it's not time, and we're going to add the same things that engineering does so that they stay in sync.
Right.
So basically, we should encourage all of the research institutes to write their own criteria work with the colleges.
Well,
I would say for 100% research, the research faculty, the problem is the research faculty have no departmental or college or school appointment. They're like in no man's land. I mean, there's no unit criteria that apply because there haven't been. And so I think GI was the first one that went down that road, and then IARC, and now INE is too. In fact, I have a draft set of INE unit criteria to review.
Our IMS people are working on some this year too.
But my view of those unit criteria, that those are to be used for promotion decisions for research faculty. Not tenure, because there's no tenure research.
Right. Well, and perhaps guidance to the director on one that is a joint appointment where you can say,
potentially,
this is my evaluation, but not.
Yeah, potentially. But the problem is that I think, you know, I kind of agree with Paul earlier on. Paul said we don't want to have two set of research, you know, unit criteria that apply to a given faculty position.
Right.
And so if GI, you know, GI gets its, maybe they already are codified and approved, but if GI has its own set of unit criteria for research faculty, and then we have this joint appointment in physics or something, is it like, okay, I'm half-time here with these unit criteria, and I'm half-time here for these unit criteria?
No, and we can't. I mean, that's unfair to the faculty members to be held to two separate standards. Right. And so you'll see this year both CNSMs and GIs, I think, and it's important maybe to almost look at them in parallel to make sure and ask those faculty who are presenting those, you know, are they
consistent
in some way? You know, we often have research faculty who eventually transitioned into tenure track lines as well. I mean, that's something that we've done. And so it'd be nice that those faculty, as they're progressing, have been held to a standard that would translate to something that would fit in the college and not something very different. I mean, they would pick up teaching.
You know, one related question is which unit peer committee do I go through?
I was just going to say, because we have, I mean, we're actually asked to address things when we've got people that are half-time at separate campuses.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a problem if you're half-time in one academic tenure-granting unit and half-time in another academic tenure-granting unit, because then there potentially are two different.
Right there.
My opinion is that if you're applying for promotion and tenure, or if you're tenured applying for promotion to full professor, that you're evaluated by the unit peer committee that's where tenure is held. So for faculty in engineering that might have a joint appointment in ASIP or INE or even GI, I'd say you go through the CEM unit peer committee because your tenure is
I think that's
CEM.
How we feel too. And sure, when we clarify the language in the blue book, it's going to be even clearer.
Right, but that leaves a lot of people, again, disenfranchised if they only have a research appointment, though. You know, so there is still a need, in my view, for the research unit peer review.
Yes, there has to be that. And then for the joint appointments between, I have faculty between math and School of Ed, for promotion, we actually created an ad hoc committee that had representation because essentially it was, they were tenured, but they were tenured in both. And so, you know, so we have one that's joint between CEM and us, and so we had to have that kind of collaboration as we looked at promotion to, and that the dean over there had some input into the process.
Right, right. Yeah. But in that case, it's still true that even though we share this faculty member, actually it's quarter time in Paul's college and my college, and then
the GI,
and then half time in GI, but the tenure is held at Paul's college.
Yeah, we moved the tenure to my college.
So in that case, the review went through Paul's college. Well, this particular faculty member probably has a background that's actually closer to the sciences than engineering.
Is that something that's specified in your contract, or
a lot of this, if it's specified at all, is in your employment letter? Yeah,
yeah.
So the process of moving that faculty member was an agreement between all of us. Mm-hmm. There's a memorandum of understanding and so on. It's not an easy process to move somebody like that, and that's not normal. That's the only time I know.
Well, this actually came up a little bit last year, sometimes, and the year before when CS did their criteria. Nowhere, the word unit isn't defined anywhere and means a different thing pretty much everywhere.
Right. Mm-hmm. So our units our departments are large enough that our units, even though our unit criteria is for all of science, it's the biologists that evaluate biologists and the geologists that evaluate the geologists. And so we subgroup our units by academic department. Now atmospheric science is small, so we sometimes augment that, but we don't, and then math does its own thing, but within the science unit criteria, I actually have subunits, but geology doesn't have separate criteria for biology, physics, and the faculty have been generally resistant to saying we need different criteria for different departments.
Right. And the liberal arts are so small that they have separate criteria for everyone, but their unit is
bigger.
College-wide.
So one unit committee has several different criteria.
Yeah, and engineering, CEM is kind of in the middle because we don't have big enough departments to have separate units in each department. So we have a committee structure that's got sort of a core committee with representation from each of the academic programs, and then it's augmented by more faculty from the discipline of the candidate.
Right.
So there's probably different structures.
They work as well, but we looked into it last year, and pretty much every single college does it completely differently.
Right. Yeah.
So we need to formalize what's already happening, it sounds like.
There's
not a...
Well, I think, I don't know, which document is that?
This is the Court Committee on Court Appointment Policy, which was over a couple of years ago, which has comments.
Yeah, they actually made some proposed language which sound pretty good.
Yeah.
We're now charged with doing, as she said, modifying the blue book.
Yeah.
And also policies for this committee, so we can suggest to unit criteria that they address joint appointments.
Yep.
And
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of a tightrope, I would say. And, you know, I encourage careful work and try to make it as collaborative as possible. Make sure, I mean, probably won't be able to absolutely satisfy absolutely everybody. But you know, I would say that if I end up at odds with some of the rules, I'll simply stop making joint appointments. Because if it's too much of a financial risk, the way it turns out to be, you know, I mean, which is kind of what Paul said earlier on at right. some point, right? If you get slammed too many times by GI. Right. Yeah.
And for 95% of our faculty, things are fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe 99% of the faculty, but there are two or three faculty where there are either those expectations upon hire were not explicit from either the director or the dean, or, you know, they basically checked out or whatever it is. And so now we have to kind of revisit it. Those are the problem ones. But like I said, most faculty understand what these criteria say and what their expectations are from both their dean and director.
Yeah.
But there are, as that important points out, there are some holes. There are some things that could be worked on better. And that's part of what we got to do. And anyway, I've got to run.
It's important, I think, because there's a lot of opportunity here. And I think, you know, most of what we have right now, I agree with Paul, is, you know, 95%, maybe even 99% correct, and works reasonably well. And you know, UAF has been able to capitalize on all of that. I mean, I think there's a reason that we spend 10 research dollars for every one that's spent at UAA, and this is part of it. And so I think it's an important issue. Just encourage some
care. So I'd be happy to come down and talk to you guys again as you get more details and questions. It's just fine. You know,
okay.
Just let me know. And we'll wait till everybody's here. And
I think Bill Bristow was the one that led that group. Mm-hmm. I think it's somewhere I have that report.
Yeah.
I'll try to dig it up. If I can't find it, maybe I'll give one of you guys a shot by email. And I'll try to review it since you guys are going to be considering it.
That would be helpful. Now.
All right.
Thanks very
Thanks.
Much.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell Jane? Well, are we done? Do we have anything else to talk about? That was basically what I wanted to hear. That was the point of this particular meeting, right?
Yeah.
And especially since we've got missing people anyway.
Yeah. Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
So we're going to be at, right now we're asking to make a policy change that would apply to all circumstances about which unit gets primacy when there's a joint appointment. Is that correct?
I think so.
It's not clear that it would be a change that at all, but I don't think it's codified right now. I think what Doug said is pretty much what we've always been doing. There haven't been battles over who gets to decide who is promoted. It's always been where tenure is, but it doesn't say that anywhere.
I see. So maybe we are just needing to, and then there's going to be this secondary issue of as the research institutes and their departments start redefining their unit criteria, hopefully they're going to address these joint appointments in more detail.
Right.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to propose to them. I was like, so okay, if say we decide that it resides with who's ever granting the tenure, do the leaders of those research institutes feel like that gives them enough teeth in working with the person that they've, you know, that they also have in a joint appointment?
Yeah, because when I read this document, it sounded to me like that was part of the problem, but they didn't seem to think that was a problem. But the directors don't have any input.
Well, maybe we need to talk to some directors.
Yeah, maybe. And I don't know that, I mean, maybe that's what they do, but I got the impression that that's not written down anywhere. So maybe we just need to
That's something we can do when we look at unit criteria. When the CNSM ones come in, we can say, hey, the directors of joint appointees don't have enough say in this process.
But then is that any of that talked about in the actual unit criteria?
Well, we can ask them to do so. And that's what he said, that he's suggesting to his committee that they put in language about joint appointments and what they're expected to do.
Right, but not about how the criteria are evaluated by the supervisors, just about what the job expectations are, right? Not about the evaluation process itself. Yeah. Okay. I feel like we have other questions off time, but I don't remember what they were. So is there anything else? Are we done?
I think we're done. Yeah. Nobody is saying anything else. I'm motioning we're done. But we don't have a chair.
Are you going to type up the...
I'll send them out.
Well, it's good. That
maybe you could look over them and make sure I capture. I wrote 4 or 5 pages of notes because they were talking fast. So yeah. I'll be sure I captured everything. So feel free. I'll just share it as a Word.
This should be recorded.
It is recorded, yeah. So I can check it if I need to. But I'll just share it as a Google Doc and just go in there and make changes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What number did Jane say was she's in?
312. Was somebody going to get more info from the provost about who, how many people we're talking about here? And
yeah, I think...
was Jane going to do that?
I think she was going to designate the appropriate person to find that out. So I'll add that to the notes then as how many people are affected. And weren't we talking about the number of people affected by the different MAUs too? Joint appointments between MAUs. And we kind of decided that wasn't really what we were doing, but we were just looking at how that issue is maybe.
Whether we need to take that
whether
issue.
We need to,
or can take that issue. Up.
Right.
Yeah.
Then that sounds familiar. Yeah. Okay. I'll make a note of that.
Yeah. For sure, there was nothing on there. But the audio will be useful for those people that weren't here in particular. It went pretty fast.
So you're all done. I can disconnect.
Yeah. I think it's Sunny. She's still there.
Oh, okay.
Bye, Sunny.
Bye.
Thanks. Okay. I'll send these out tomorrow or Friday.
Okay. Thanks.